Hello and welcome to the Business Standard Morning Show. I'm Kanishka Gupta. Let's have a look at the stories for the day.
This is GE Vernova, helping generate and move the energy that will change the world. Welcome to a new era of energy.
Cars and high-end phones are selling like hotcakes, but the demand for motorcycles and entry-level mobile phones is on decline. While big-screen TVs and luxury apparel flew off the shelves in cities, rural demand for FMCG products saw a negligible jump in October, a month which brings good fortune. So what do the divergent fortunes of these industries say about consumption in India and its economy? Bhaskar Kumar brings you the answer.
Soaring inflation has added new terms to the common lexicon this year. The most famous is shrinkflation, where a 155-gram bar of dishwashing soap of 10 rupees starts weighing 140 grams for the same price. This means that the cost of making that soap has gone up, but the company doesn't want to pass that burden on to buyers, especially if they belong to the bottom of the wealth pyramid. Or downtrading, where buyers switch from an expensive or bigger product to a smaller or lower-end one. For example, those using a Pear soap may have switched to Lux. The increasing frequency with which these terms have been appearing in the news points to the nature of the Indian economy's recovery. Let us look at the latest data. Makers of consumer electronics like smartphones, televisions, and other appliances have reportedly slashed production by almost a third since the beginning of November compared with a year earlier. This is the second time this year that firms have cut production. While smartphone sales were down year-on-year by over a third in November, the entry-level segment witnessed a sharper fall with half of its sales wiped out. This is what market researcher Counterpoint told the media. A well-known maker of consumer electronics told One Financial Daily that in televisions, the entry-level segment was the worst hit. The 32-inch variant had accounted for half of the total television sales last year, but its contribution is now down to just above a third. Sales of entry-level products had reportedly remained muted even during the festival season. Industry members told the media that while demand becomes muted after Diwali every year, this year was proving to be the worst in about a decade.
Due to macroeconomic headwinds and due to inflationary pressures, right, the sub-10,000 segment has been hit the worst. So consumers in that particular segment have been postponing their discretionary purchases, which includes electronics as well as smartphones. So when we went into the festive season this year, the smartphone inventory was at around 10 weeks, which was way higher than the normal average inventory. Now, even after the festive season sales with the aggressive offers, the inventory has not come down yet. It's still at around 8 to 9 weeks, which is high. So brands in all will look to clear that inventory in the channel first before, you know, kind of filling channel with new shipments, and combine it with the fact that the demand in itself does not look very optimistic, especially in the lower price tiers. This is bound to affect shipments as well as production.
After the release of data on India's September factory output, as measured by the Index of Industrial Production, economists had told the media that the poor performance of both consumer durables and non-durables was worrisome. Consumer durables include cars and household appliances that typically have a long useful life, and items that are consumed in one use or a few uses are called non-durables. Contrary to the growth typically seen ahead of the festival months, consumer durables output contracted 4.5% in September after falling 2.5% in August. Within the sector, sales of entry-level appliances and goods were muted even during the festival season. This could mean that rural India continues to be under stress. Meanwhile, sales of mid and high-end products reportedly jumped over a quarter during Diwali. The fast-moving consumer goods market reportedly fell 15% by value in November compared to October. Why? Because Kirana stores cut down on purchases. After aggressively restocking their shelves in the build-up to the festival season, most retailers still had leftover inventory. One industry executive had some good news. Volume growth was recovering gradually, with inflation having peaked. But he cautioned that the pickup in demand was still slow in rural India. Rural consumption in India has remained under stress, with volumes of FMCG firms declining in both the July-September and the April-June quarters. In an indication of how concerned India Inc. is, in the lead-up to the budget, the country's top business leaders and industry bodies have asked Finance Minister Nirmala Sitharaman to rationalize personal tax rates, especially at the lower end of the income spectrum. They hope that such a move will increase broad-based consumption. Meanwhile, the relatively affluent remain untouched by sticky inflation. For example, this was the best November ever for car makers. It was also the sixth straight month when domestic car sales zipped past 300,000 units. According to one executive, the industry was well on its way to breach the previous sales record of calendar year 2018. Meanwhile, retail loans expanded by 20% in October, against just below 13% a year ago. The rise in credit offtake was largely driven by the housing and vehicle loan segments. Clearly, the Indian economy's recovery from the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic remains K-shaped, which means that while those towards the top of the wealth pyramid have continued buying goods and services, even increasing their consumption, those at the bottom have seen their discretionary income shrink. Discretionary income is the money a household or individual has left to spend after necessities are paid for. So, how will such a prolonged spell of K-shaped recovery impact the economy?
See, a K-shaped recovery, which we're seeing today for a longer period of time, actually indicates that we cannot be certain about the growth path. So growth is going to be a bit volatile. I mean, at times we'll be seeing that quarterly numbers show an upside, otherwise there'll be a downside, because growth is not broad-based. And numerically, we will probably still be in the region of around 6.5% next year, and maybe a little higher the following year. But it won't be a case of saying that the manufacturing sector in particular will be showing robust growth. It would still be very much uneven with the infrastructure or the metals kind of segments. Those are the ones which would probably be driving, those which are linked more to what the government is doing on the infrastructure side.
And when can we expect the recovery to become more inclusive?
So it will take a much longer time for it to become broad-based, because the way in which economies progress is that growth starts from the consumption-based sectors and then moves over to the infrastructure, the investment-based sectors. Now, given the fact that consumption has been lagging, and this has been a problem even before COVID, so I would tend to believe that this will take a longer period of time before we are able to create jobs, generate income, which leads to higher consumption. So therefore, it could be another 2-3 years before it becomes really broad-based.
This raises an important question. How long can India afford having its population split in two, those that have moved on from the pandemic's impact and those that are still struggling to recover?
India Inc. recovers from the scar of pandemic, there is another big threat which refuses to go away. Government institutions too are vulnerable to it. Last month, a cyber attack brought the services at Ames Delhi to a standstill. So why is India vulnerable to such attacks, and what can be done to tackle this threat? Tushar Verma's report has the answer.
AIIMS, the country's most prestigious medical institute, has been grappling to contain an altogether different virus for the last 13 days. From doctors, the spotlight is now trained on cybersecurity experts who are going from computer to computer to sanitize them and flush out the malware. 7 servers of the Premier Institute, which are said to be holding the data of about 4 crore patients, are said to be at risk. Meanwhile, the services have been shifted to manual mode, and it may take another few days before AIIMS starts its normal operations. This attack has also focused the spotlight on India's cybersecurity. In May this year, a similar attack had grounded scores of SpiceJet planes. Power utilities in Telangana and Andhra were hacked in 2019. Uttar Haryana Bijli Vitran Nigam hit the year before in 2018. Nearly 70% of all Indian organizations, including Oil India, Tech Mahindra, Haldiram, and other industry majors, faced a ransomware attack in the last 3 years. India faced more than 6 lakh cyber attacks in the first half of the year. This translates to over 3,700 attacks per day. A report by Cloud SEK revealed that the Indian healthcare industry faced the second highest number of cyber attacks in the world in 2021 after the United States. The sharp jump in cyber attacks has also forced companies to opt for cyber insurance policies. About 66% of organizations in India are now covered under this insurance. Of all the cyber attacks, ransomware constitutes about 25%. But why has there been a spurt in such attacks in the last few years?
There is a proliferation of devices. There are too many devices that we are using all the time. And we are, as corporates, following a hybrid work culture as well. This is the time we see cyber criminals, they are pursuing multi-vector approaches to target enterprises. Cyber attack on all businesses, they are becoming more frequent, more targeted, more complex. And this is leading to an enormous rise in ransomwares. Certain, the Computer Emergency Response Team of India, stated that 14 lakh cybersecurity incidents occurred in India in 2021 alone. More than 2 lakh happened only between Jan and Feb of this year. And in fact, in 2022, we saw cyber attacks to be happening across all industry verticals.
It has become an organized crime on the dark web.
There are cybercrime gangs on dark web who are running campaigns through affiliates and have an entire business model around this.
But most Indian organizations lack cyber infra to thwart such attacks. They don't allot required funding to deal with this threat.
According to certain statistics, the amount of money that organizations sort of spend on cybersecurity is just less than 1% of their overall budgeting, which is a startling figure, especially the fact that we are completely now a digitalized economy. And that has led to increase in some of these attacks and organizations being exposed and also falling victim. And of course, with digitalization, there has been an increase in the attacks as well, because everything has moved online.
So what more should the Indian organizations do to prevent such attacks?
First of all, what they can now do is stop using legacy infrastructure. Hackers have the tendency to exploit your architecture when you are non-adherent to a security procedure. In fact, when you have a vulnerability existing in your architecture and you are ignorant to the same. And we also saw that enterprises in India started investing a lot in threat intelligence solutions that are backed by AI/ML capabilities, so that the system can detect the attacks when they have happened, but also proactively detect future attacks via the historical telemetry that's there.
Meanwhile, the center is expected to table the data protection bill in the upcoming winter session of Parliament. The bill puts the onus on data processing and storage entities to take adequate security measures. The draft bill promises data security and privacy. It also has provisions for stringent fines of up to 200 crore rupees for non-adherence. However, Waris believes annual cybersecurity audits are the need of the hour.
Most important is the regulator. You can have fines, but if they are not imposed or if they do not act as a deterrent, then it all is just on paper. From my perspective, I think moving forward, we really need to do two things, is to sensitize people, develop a culture, make it obligatory on organizations to annually conduct audits on cybersecurity.
Attack on premier institutions like AIIMS should send the alarm bells ringing. For the government, enforcement of the law and its compliance is the key to curb such cyber attacks. While the private sector should ensure that its workforce is aware and trained, as prevention is better than cure.
Experts are also calling for a comprehensive review of cybersecurity guidelines. Moving on, equity markets have started the last month of 2022 at record high levels as renewed buying by FIIs and hopes of moderation in rate hikes boosted sentiment. With the US Fed chief striking a dovish tone last week, all eyes are on the RBI this week. Our next report tells into what the markets expect from the central bank and what other key factors will guide the trading week.
It was mostly a one-way rally for the markets last week as most frontline indexes reacted positively to the US Fed chief's remarks. Last week, Jerome Powell said that the US Federal Reserve may go slow on rate hikes starting as soon as December. The Sensex and Nifty hit record high levels at 63,583 and 18,888 respectively last week, but succumbed to profit taking on the last trading day of the week. Renewed FII buying coupled with a 6.3% year-on-year growth in Q2 GDP further aided the sentiment. Gains last week were largely driven by index heavyweight Reliance Industries, IT and select financial shares. In the week ahead, the markets will focus on the outcome of the 3-day Monetary Policy Committee or MPC meeting of the Reserve Bank of India scheduled for December 7 and the outcome of the Gujarat Assembly elections scheduled for December 8.
The domestic inflation in India, though still higher than the RBI's target level of 4% plus minus 2%, is now at 3 months low. This has led to the investors expecting a less aggressive rate hike in the December policy meet, followed by an extended pause to track the impact of the previous rate hikes. The market participants are expecting RBI to hike the rates by 35 basis points versus the previous expectation of 50 basis points. If the hike is comparatively lower than expected, we believe that it can give good boost to the markets.
Echoing similar views, Tanvi Gupta Jain of UBS India too expects the central bank to raise repo rate up to 35 basis points. She says that even as headline CPI inflation has remained above the RBI's upper threshold limit of 6% since February 2022, we believe it has likely peaked now. In our base case, we expect the MPC to raise the repo rate by another 25 to 35 basis points in the upcoming policy review. 6 of the 10 economists quizzed by Business Standard expect a 35 basis points hike, while 2 provided a range of 25 to 35 bips, 1 respondent each predicted a 25 and 35 bips hike. Globally, China policies to fight COVID-19 and outcome of the OPEC Plus meet shall dictate the market trend. Against this, technical charts suggest a trading range of 18,400 to 18,900 for the Nifty 50 index with a support at 18,600 level. For the Sensex, tech charts indicate support at 62,250 and resistance at 63,500.
After the markets, let us see how India is trying to find ways to meet its rising electricity demand. The government recently said that it is exploring building small modular reactors. But what are they? Our next segment explains.
Union Minister Jitendra Singh recently said that India was taking steps to develop small modular nuclear reactors or SMRs. Singh said that the participation of the private sector and startups should be explored in the development of this critical technology in the country. The minister also said that these modular reactors will also help the country in its efforts to cut greenhouse gas emissions. Small modular reactor is an advanced nuclear reactor that has a power generation capacity of up to 300 megawatts per unit. This is one-third the capacity of a traditional nuclear reactor. The main benefit of the SMR is that it is small and modular. SMRs were designed to do away with the problems in conventional nuclear plants. Conventional nuclear reactors are massive in size and have a high cost of construction. According to some estimates, the construction of these plants may cost up to $5,945 per kilowatt capacity. SMRs provide a solution to all this. The small size of these reactors makes it possible for the companies to install them on difficult terrain. Their modular property allows the company to transport them easily from the manufacturing location to the plant. It brings down their cost of production as well as the construction time. In areas which lack sufficient grid capacity, like rural regions, SMRs can be installed into the existing grid and increase the power output. The SMRs provide low carbon power, which is less harmful to the environment as compared to thermal power. According to the International Atomic Energy Agency, SMRs are relatively safer. No human intervention or external power or force is required to shut down systems because passive systems rely on physical phenomena like gravity and self-pressurization. These reactors require less frequent refueling as compared to refueling once every 1 to 2 years. In conventional plants, these plants can last 3 to 7 years. Some SMRs are designed to operate even for up to 30 years without refueling. Over 70 commercial SMRs have been developed around the world, but the only modular reactor design that is operating is on board the floating nuclear power plant Akademik Lomonosov in Russia. The construction of the biggest land-based SMR began in the Chinese power plant Linglong 1 in 2021 and is due for completion in 2026. Their cost of production is likely to stay high unless mass production is undertaken. Now, with the center's involvement, SMRs may become more viable.
The nation's trusted bank, SBI, the banker to every Indian.
Russia's Akademik Lomonosov is the world's first floating nuclear power plant. It started commercial operation in May 2020 and is producing energy from 2 small modular reactors. That is all for today. For more news, views and analysis, please log on to business-standard.com.
For more news, views and updates, subscribe to Business Standard on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast and Spotify. Also follow us on YouTube, Vimeo, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and LinkedIn.